Hello and welcome to Tax Resolution Talk. My name's Jim Wade and I'm a tax attorney, and I help individuals fight back against the IRS. And in this episode, I'm going to be speaking with Jared Altman. He's an enrolled agent who also works with people who have trouble with the IRS. And we're going to be talking about what to do if you can't pay the IRS on July 15th. You may think there isn't any option except for fully pay it or hope for the best. But we're going to have some stuff in here we think you'll find informative as well as helpful. So please enjoy this episode.
Hi, so I'm here today with Jim, and we're going to be talking about what your options are if you can't pay your balance come tax time now that we're coming out of COVID and some of the IRS's grace periods that they've allowed based on what's going on. There are a number of options depending on what you're dealing with, whether you're an individual or you're a business, and also depending on the amounts and your ability to pay.
That's right. July 15th is right around the corner.
Exactly. We're almost in July now, so you're running out of time. But again, there are a number of options. We'll start with talking about individuals, and then we'll move on to business as we get through that. If you're an individual, you usually can get, if you can full pay the amount within 72 months, assuming the balance isn't, particularly high, and high for IRS standards is, over 50 or 100,000. So if you just owe a little bit, you can usually get an installment agreement approved pretty quickly. Again, assuming that you pay it off in 72 months and you haven't defaulted on one before. If you have defaulted on one before, then sometimes you have to go through a little bit more of a rigmarole. If you can't pay in 72 months, then there's some other processes, which I think Jim can probably tell us a little bit about, just the financials process and what goes into that.
Well, actually, before we get down that road, just this is a reminder that July 15th is the due date to file a return and pay any taxes due. You could extend to October 15th, but that's to file the return. So the first thing you need to think about is if you're going to owe any money, if you have some available, you'll want to pay it on July 15th to stop any interest and penalties that'll accrue. So because a lot of people get surprised, they think, well, I extended the time to file and I paid it all off on October 15th. Why am I getting a bill from the IRS saying I owe some additional money? That's because July 15th is the due date to file and pay your taxes. So just keep that in mind. And as Jared said, a lot of options are available to you if you can't full pay. For example, you can ask for a 120-day extension. It doesn't stop interest and penalties, but it gives you 120 days to pay it off. Or you can ask for this installment agreement that we're talking about, the payment plan. And Jared's already mentioned the basic one. If you've got up to $10,000, you can get a guaranteed payment, and it is payable in 3 years or less. If it's between 10 and 25, you can do it over 72 months. What's good about that one is if the IRS has filed a lien against you, you can get it removed after three payments if you agree to have the money taken out of your account by direct debit. So instead of you writing a check, they take it out of your account directly. Between 25 and 50, if as an individual, you can get a similar deal paid off in 72 months. The only difference is if the IRS has filed a lien, if you make those three payments through a direct debit, they're not going to withdraw it. But if the IRS hasn't filed a lien, they won't file one. And a lien, if you're not familiar with what it is basically what they call a passive collection device. It means the IRS isn't going to take anything from you, but if you've got a house and sometimes some other valuable property, the IRS will file what they call a notice of federal tax lien, informing the world that you owe money. So sometimes it hits your credit a little bit, but often if you've got a home, it means that when you go to sell it, the IRS is going to have their hand out looking to get paid. Or if you get, other real estate from, say, family, or you have as an investment. So for many people, a lien is problematic if you're trying to either buy or sell a home, because no one wants to lend to someone who owes the IRS, and it makes it difficult to sell because the IRS has got to get paid. So just keep that in mind. And for more than $50,000, this area is a little bit in flux. It used to be between $50 and $100,000. If you could pay it over 84 months, you could do it without having to file any financial documentation. You could just, they'd tell you how much it would be per month and you'd go with it. Now it looks like it's going to be replaced with, if you're an individual or if you're an out of business sole proprietorship, you can do an installment agreement up to $250,000 without a financial disclosures, as long as it's paid over the collection period. So the IRS generally has 10 years to collect. As long as the payments, whatever the amount is that you offer or the IRS calculates for you, if it pays it off in the what we call in the business the CSED, collection statute end date, you're okay. For businesses, I believe, Jared, it's only up to $50,000. Yeah, I think $50,000 businesses are a little bit more restrictive. I don't think you get quite as good a deal with the streamlined on that. Streamlined meaning you don't.
No, you don't. If I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah. We call it streamlined because you don't have to do any financial disclosures. For many people, that's an issue, because if you're doing a financial disclosure, you're telling the IRS where your bank accounts are, what you have for real estate, cars, collectibles. And people, you know, rightly are worried that if they disclose it, the IRS, if the deal doesn't work for a payment plan, the IRS will come and take the stuff. So if you can get it streamlined or without financial disclosures, I think for many people, that's a better option. But any more than either $250,000 individual or $50,000 for a business, you're going to expect to do financial disclosures. We call that Form 433A or B. A is for individuals, B's are for business. And that's the collection information statement you have to fill out. Anything? I kind of went on a long rant there, Jared. Got anything you want to add to that?
No, I mean, the big thing that I wanted to make sure we talked a little bit about what the financials entail, because, you know, smaller businesses and individuals probably have never had to deal with that kind of thing before. The big thing to remember when we talk about financials is it's basically just disclosing, you know, what you got. You know, if the IRS is going to allow you to pay a certain amount or allow you to pay less than the full balance, you know, they're not just going to let you do that, you know, on your word about what you can pay, you know, any more than a bank is going to loan you money. And in a certain sense, the IRS is essentially seeing itself doing the same thing. You know, you have a balance, and they're extending you a loan, essentially, and not technically, but that is sort of you're going through that same process where, you know, you have a balance and you have to pay that balance down, and they want to make sure that, you know, you're not shortchanging them when you could be potentially paying them a lot quicker. So that involves, you know, what you make, what your spouse makes if it's a joint tax debt, what your expenses are. And then the other big thing to remember is that, you know, for individual expenses, they do have some standards that they like to apply. So, you know, if you owe, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 and you know, your mortgage is $5,000 or $6,000 a month, you know, you might be having a conversation about that. Or if your food bill is, you know, $2,000 a month for, you know, for a couple, you know, they're not going to count that necessarily towards, you know, your expenses. They're going to cap it. So that's an important thing to remember. As far as businesses go, on the other hand, you know, as long as it's ordinary and necessary, and it doesn't look like you're trying to, you know, pay personal expenses out of the business account, which if you have tax debt is a really bad idea, because then they may just pierce your corporation and seize your assets, which, by the way, they don't have to go to court to do.
So yes, that's right.
But a lot quicker than you might think. But the key thing there is, you know, you're just going to need to document, and respond timely, you know, if they ask for more information. Because if you don't respond, they'll take that as a sign that they should, you know, proceed with their letters and then eventual levies and liens.
Yeah, I think that's a key point is, for much of what we're talking about with the IRS, something can always be worked out. Maybe it doesn't work out the way you want it to, but something can be worked out. The worst thing you could do is kind of stick your head in the sand and do nothing. Contacting the IRS and at least in good faith attempting to resolve it will save you a lot of grief, because nothing is worse than when you wake up and you get a notification from your bank that something's checks bouncing or something's happening because the IRS has seized your money. Or it doesn't even apply to the state of Maine. I'm sorry, to the IRS. You also have, because we're in Maine, the state of Maine Department of Revenue. So if you don't want to irritate the tax authorities, put it that way.
Yeah, that's
a good way. Actually, something you mentioned is there's financial disclosures usually come in when you cannot fully pay the tax debt. Either you don't have enough income or don't have enough assets. And for many of you who've listened to those ads on the radio or TV where they're talking about pennies on the dollar or for the least amount legally possible, what they're getting at is the IRS offer and compromise program. Maine has a similar program, but oftentimes it's pretty much 100% tax, so it's not really a settlement per se. But with the IRS, they'll settle, you know, your individual and business taxes for less than the full amount if you can show that you can't pay that total tax over time. And financial disclosures are a key part to that. But you also need to disclose financials if, you know, you can pay a certain amount per month, but it's not going to fully pay the tax debt off by the end of that collection statute end date. We call that a partial pay installment agreement. Or the poor man's offer and compromise, as we call it. So you also got to disclose it there. And then finally, you can sometimes qualify for hardship status or currently non-collectible where, you know, the taxes are still there. You still owe interest and penalties. They continue to accrue, but the IRS doesn't try to collect against you. So often this is for people who are unemployed. Maybe they're retired and living off Social Security. You know, you have to at least do some financial disclosures there so they can see that you can't pay without sort of cutting into your necessary living expenses, so housing, food, things like that, and they want to make sure that you don't have like an asset that you own. Maybe you can't convert it to cash real quick, but maybe down the road you can. So you're sitting on, say, real estate next to Disney. You know, no one's put an offer in for it yet, but you know, someday maybe it has some value. But you are otherwise broke, so that's just something to understand financial disclosures. But Jared, for most part, the people that are listening to this, likely their situation is going to fit into one of those streamlined agreements or one where generally they're not going to have to do the financial disclosures as long as they can pay it. But if they're considering some other option, then they need to have some financial disclosure.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I'm so used to dealing with people that need to do those disclosures that, you know, in my head it's the default, but in reality, yeah, most people just need to get a payment plan set up for 72 months if the balance isn't particularly high. And, you know, it's, you know, if you owe $5,000 or $10,000, that, you know, it is a lot of money for a lot of people. You know, it'd be a lot of money for me too, to just have to throw down. But, you know, that's $138 a month-ish payment, probably with penalties and interest, it's going to be a bit more, but, you know, with the $130 to $160 a month for 72 months, which, you know, that's a long, it is a long time, but, you know, on the lower end, the IRS is very much willing to just let you, you know, pay them over time. One of the big things to remember is there are some different fees depending on how you apply for those. Online is by far the cheapest. But I've had clients who couldn't get into those systems before. So sometimes you get those fees waived too, if that's the issue, or at least prorated down to the cheapest one. But if you can't do it online, that is going to be the cheapest way to get that done. And So I guess the other thing to talk about there would be, you know, once you have that set up, there are some different ways to have that those installment agreements paid. You know, there's direct debit, which comes out of your, you know, out of your bank account each month on a specific day. You obviously have to pick a day that exists in every month. So, you know, the 1st through the 25th, you know, they're wise to that.
God, I was going to go with the 29th. Come on.
Yeah.
Save me one payment a year.
Yeah. So direct debit, you know, you can also send them a check. You can go online and pay it every month. I usually tell people direct debit is the way to go because, you know, if you bust your installment agreement, they're harder to get the second time around. And if you write checks, you know, you can end up with a situation where you've paid them and you've sent the mail in, but because they're backlogged on mail, you know, you click over and the system is not having paid, and then they cash the check later and then you are paid, and it just can make it really, really heinous. So, you know, electronic pay or direct debit. Direct debit's usually the easiest. And if you're not sure if, you know, the money's going to be there every month, I tell people that, you know, you can set up another bank account. That's the only thing that comes out of it each month. And you just make sure there's always a couple $100 in there. Because, you know, unfortunately, it's got to be one of the first bills you pay. You know, obviously, sometimes the mortgage comes first and things like that. But, you know, it's got to be up near the top. Otherwise, this problem is never going to go away.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of a good segue into if you find yourself in a tax problem this year, the question becomes, is it because, you know, you didn't have enough withheld from your paycheck? Or if you're self-employed, are you not setting aside enough for estimated tax payments? The IRS generally is willing to work with you if, you know, first time, maybe a second year in a row, you're kind of finding yourself here. But they want you to get off that treadmill of accruing new tax debts. So they'll willingly work with you on some of these back taxes if you start getting into current compliance. And that means, you know, like 2019, filing 2019 on time and paying as much as you can, if not all of it, and then making sure that you're paying your estimates for 2020. If you can't pay both, 2020 estimates are fine. And they'll work out 2019 and any other past years. But the issue is getting off the treadmill of accruing new tax debts. And I know for self-employed people, if you're listening to this, you know, it's easy to justify business expenses. I've got to pay my subcontractors. I've got to pay for my supplies. I've got to pay for, you know, a new computer. And you keep pushing aside the money that should be set aside for taxes. And it's easy because you don't, you know, unlike someone who's employed where there's withholding tables, no one's telling you how much to put aside. So really get an accountant who can figure out that amount for you and pay it. Now, and maybe if you are concerned about taxes, talk to an accountant to see if you can't do things to reduce your overall taxes. There's no law that says you have to pay the most amount of taxes. And typically, if you're self-employed, you are paying more than, say, someone who has a corporation or a regular corporation. So, you know, there are some strategies out there that can help reduce your taxes. So don't, you know, I guess don't make excuses, put that way, because I hear a lot of excuses why people get behind and they don't want to fix it. It's deal with it. Trust me. Once you get off that treadmill of accruing new tax debts, and you start talking to an accountant to find some good strategies to save on taxes, you'll be much happier. The IRS will be out of your life and you can save some money. Soapbox, I'm going to put it aside now.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
And that's one of the things, you know, and there are some strategies that can potentially really help on the back end too. You know, once the tax year is over, sometimes it's harder to come up with ways that'll reduce the tax you owe. But, you know, if you or like, let's say you're right on the border for the premium tax credit and you exceeded the, you know, the limits, that's a kind of an all or nothing credit. In some cases, you end up paying back significantly more after you get above a certain threshold. If you're a small business owner and you have cash available, or even credit, sometimes it can make a lot of sense to make an IRA or an HSA contribution. And sometimes you can even open some of those accounts after December 31st. And you can end up making a significant balance disappear, without a just by making a contribution to an account like that. That's what you can do at this point. If you're in September or October or November, there's obviously some even more flexibility, but, a good account and even a 20-minute to 30-minute conversation might allow you to shuffle funds around in a way that is completely legitimate, but doesn't actually really hurt your cash position that much. So,
yeah, retirement is the best tax shelter you can find. I mean, you've got, for many people, it has protections against creditors. It allows you to sock away money for retirement. You get a tax deduction today, as opposed to down the road when, hopefully you'll be earning, you'll be in a lower tax bracket. Maybe not necessarily earning less, but it's the best thing you can do, and not many people take advantage of it. And it can have significant savings. I think most people, the problem is it's a cash outlay, and you don't get a dollar for dollar reduction in tax. So people will go out and do something else, like buy a new truck, buy new equipment, and oftentimes they'll finance it. And now you get into this sort of addiction to buying stuff at year end to get a write-off under Section 179, they call it, but you've got to pay it back. Yeah. You don't get as big a, you only get it as a percentage of your effective tax rate, but if as that's building up tax-free, 20, 30 years down the road, you've got a nice nest egg and you got a deduction today. So you can't really beat it. And let me reiterate, I'm a bankruptcy attorney, creditor protection. It doesn't protect against the IRS, but as long as you keep out of trouble with the IRS, most other creditors can't get it. That's pretty damn good. And, there's a lot of planning. If you're older, it has a lot of estate planning stuff you can do to sort of benefit your family. So, there's no good reason as a business owner not to have a retirement plan, especially if you're self-employed. Anything you want to add to that? Or I think that's probably, there's a whole bunch of strategies. There's, as the day is long, there are strategies for your business. Each business is a little different. So some things are available to one business, for example, like a contractor. There are some different techniques on how to spread load income. There's some tax advantages to tax reporting for income. Farmers and fishermen, they have some great tax benefits too. So each industry has a little bit of quirks to them. Again, getting a good accountant, I guess, who knows your industry is going to be key to keeping those taxes down.
And I would say the other thing that we want to make sure we hit on, we talked a little bit about the payment terms for individuals. For businesses, they are a little bit different. So if you heard that 72 months figure, it is not always 72 months. They're looking at cash flow, and you can go farther in some cases, as in have a longer payment plan. But it really depends on when the debt was accrued and how long it's been sitting around. You can have up to 10 years in some cases if you applied right away. But in others, you might have to pay it much quicker if it came out of nowhere. So there's a lot of variation in what your payment might look like. And if that happens, you may also be able to set up a payment plan where there's initially more going in. And then at a certain point it drops down, or vice versa, where, it starts low and then it increases over time. That's another possibility. So depending on, how you're doing, you might be able to say, 5 months from now, this goes up. After
it's really good for seasonal employees. Yep. Seasonal. Great.
So that's an example of, usually that involves coordinating with the IRS somehow and either an IRS employee or a revenue officer. And then the last thing I want to talk a little bit, we mentioned partial pay. Partial pay is really hard to get unless you know what you're doing and you know how to present the story. Most of the time, the IRS is going to be looking for full pay, and you're going to have to really document that you can't full pay before they do that. With individuals, it is a little bit, it's easier than businesses. Businesses, especially if there's trust fund or payroll taxes involved, the IRS usually isn't going to let you partial pay on those, but for other stuff, they may. But just be aware if that's where you're going, because it's a large balance, you're going to have to really mind that application and everything that's going in. Otherwise, you know, it's probably going to get, you know, might get dismissed just kind of procedurally, because again, you know, they really want to make sure that everything is locked up tight if they're going to give you that kind of deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, before I forget, because I'm also a bankruptcy attorney, I reiterate that. Bankruptcy is an option to resolve your tax debts. If it's a recent tax debt, you know, it has to be meet certain criteria, one being that it's for a return that was due about 3 years ago, so nothing recent. But if you're settled with some older tax debts, bankruptcy may be an option. It's a little bit too complicated to go into right now, but in a later episode, we'll talk about it. So, you know, that may be an option if you've got some old tax debts, because like a fine wine, sometimes they age well. I think that's, oh, well, the only other thing you can say is if you are lucky enough to sort of avoid the eye of Sauron of the IRS and you can hold out until the 10 years runs from the assessment, and there's an asterisk on the 10 years, the collection statute end date, you know, can be extended for certain reasons. But generally, if you can get it to the end of the 10 years, the debt automatically goes away. So, you know, if we're not talking about current debts, you've got some older stuff, you know, you could oftentimes, you know, ride it out. You know, not an advised strategy, but sometimes people do it and it works. So yeah, keep that in mind if you got some older tax debt. I think actually before I, so it's not exactly what we were relevant to what we're talking about today, but if you do have older tax debts, sometimes people will do things like, hey, I'll file an offer and compromise because it's getting old and try to wipe it out. You got to be careful because an offer extends the 10 years. And there are some other things you can do that extends the 10 years. You want to consider those things before you take an action that might mean you owe it for 11 years, 12 years.
I'm not mistaken, applying for an installment agreement tolls it for a little period of time. So that's one reason not to constantly be going in and out of these things, because there's the potential that you could end up making the problem last even longer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's all for right now. I mean, in summary, you know, and Jared, you can add wherever I don't fill in. If you can't pay, that's okay. There are options out there. The IRS isn't going to come in and kick down your door and take your stuff. But, you know, you'll want to try to work with them to come up with some sort of plan. There are payment plans available if you can pay it, but you just can't pay it right now. And if you have, you know, as we talked about, that streamlined installment agreement, or maybe one where it's for a longer period of time or a larger amount where you have to do some financial disclosures, or if you can't full pay, then you have, as Jared said, a partial pay installment agreement where you pay what you can until the statute runs on collection, or an offer and compromise where you sell it for less, and then finally maybe qualify for a hardship status until you can start making payments. So just if you can file your, I guess what I want to say to end this on my step is do something. File the return, file the extension, but don't do nothing. Oftentimes people who owe money, they'll talk to their accountant, they owe money, they won't file the return. You get automatically hit with a failure to file penalty if you owe any money. So don't do that.
And the failure to file penalty hits a lot harder than the failure to pay penalty. You'll start to get nasty grabs, But, you know, there's also that 120 days that Jim talked about. So if it's just a matter of having a little bit of time to put it together, you're almost always better filing, not paying, dealing with the IRS, and just getting it dealt with. The worst thing you could do from a how much is it going to cost you over time is to not pay and not file.
Yeah. I mean, on a $10,000 tax debt, you fail to file, it's 5% per month over 5 months. So you added, if you don't file within, you know, those first 5 months after the due date, you just added $2,500 onto your bill. You know, you really don't want to do that if you don't have to. And it's only 0.5% per month for failure to pay. It's still 25%, but it, you know, it takes a lot longer to get to 25% than if you don't file the return. I think that's it. The only thing to wrap this up is, you know, Jared and I, you know, we deal with tax resolution, you know, helping people sort of, you know, resolve their tax debts with the IRS. And there's a new commissioner, a new sheriff in town at the IRS, Chuck Rettig. And I was talking to Jared earlier, and the IRS comes out every year with a data book, which sort of tells you, you know, stats about the IRS, what it's done to, you know, help taxpayers resolve their problems. And for those of you who've been on the phone with the IRS, you wouldn't think they're really helping you, you know, three, four hours on the phone. But they keep statistics like that, how much they collect, you know, what's the cost of collecting, you know, audits, you know, the audits they've done, criminal prosecutions, it's got everything. And there's a letter at the front of this one, which I want to kind of point out real quick. Chuck Rettig, he said, you know, he's going to put the E in enforcement. And the letter essentially is a shot across the bow. It's kind of the iron fist in the velvet glove. He's talking about, oh, you know, we're trying to help our taxpayers, we're processing all these returns. Oh, by the way, we're going to be extremely active in compliance. So that means he is consolidating compliance efforts and focusing them on problem areas. And he says right now the cost of collecting $100 is the cost of the IRS to collect $100 on average is less than it's been in the last 75 years. That's his pitch to the Congress to get more money to start shaking taxpayers down for what they owe. You know, obviously, if you're a good taxpayer, you file on time, pay on time, no worries. But syndicated conservation easements, captive insurance companies, cryptocurrency people who have been, you know, using it but not reporting it. There's all these people, high income non-filers. He's put a target on their back. And this is his sort of, dear Congress, give me the money to go chase these people down. So if you've got, you know, haven't filed your returns in a while, or you owe a lot of money and you earn over $100,000 a year, you should be rightly concerned. So that's my take from reading that letter. You know, it sounds all sweet, but when I read, you know, he's working on total compliance effort, he's really pushing enforcement. And that's all I have, Jared.
Yeah, that's all I have as well. I think we hit everything that we needed to hit for today. I know next time we were talking about a couple different topics. We might talk a little bit about kind of general collection stuff, some of the different procedures that are available if you can't pay, or how to deal with that. Actually, the one other thing we should add here is just that everything that we said that deals with the IRS does not apply to the state of Maine. Yeah. The state of Maine where we are, they have different rules. They have 1, 2, sometimes 3 year payment plans. 3 year ones are not compliant. The penalties accrue differently. They sort of follow the IRS standard sometimes when it comes to expenses, but not always. Completely different forms.
Is it safe to say that they do whatever the IRS does if it suits them, but they do whatever they want otherwise?
Yeah, I would say that I would say that it's, you know, if it seems like it's a good system and it matches, then yeah, I've had some people reference the national standards when talking to them, and I've had other people say, you know, completely not bother with the national standards. So, and you know, there isn't a main revenue manual. So, you know, both of those could be allowed approaches. We don't know, you know, and it may have changed and, you know, nothing was published. So, you know, just be aware that that is a completely different black box.
Yeah. I think the only thing to really note on that is when it comes to a levy, meaning that the state of Maine reaches into your bank account to take funds, the IRS does it at a point in time. So they'll say, okay, on this date, we want a levy. Whatever's in the account at the moment that that levy hits, they take it and hold it for 21 days for you to work something out with them, or it gets sent to the IRS. Maine, as soon as it hits, it stays for the full 21 days. And anytime money comes into that account in the next 21 days, they take it. And good luck ever getting it back from them.
Yeah, you can get 200 back if you're really good. And you can show financial hardship. I've had that happen where they, and even then it's still got to be by the 21 days. You know, if the check, actually, I've had clients where I've been coordinating with the levy unit. Actually, Pam, who's over there, she's the levy unit as far as I can tell. Yeah. And then the customer's bank, and, you know, the bank actually went and check to see if the check had gone out, and it didn't, and so they're able to keep the $200. If the check had left the door, too bad. And so, you know, at that point in time, that $200 was a really big deal to that client, so I, you know, made sure that that happened. But, you know, it's procedural like that. If the check's out the door, you don't get the money. If the check's not out the door, you do.
yeah, I think I've gotten more than $200 once. But yeah. It is, it's very hard.
Is that for a business?
No, it was for an individual, but I had.
Really? Okay.
It was some extenuating circumstances. So,
yep.
But generally, if you say, well, I need it for rent, I'd be like, well, I guess you should have responded to us when we sent you those letters saying work something out with us. So.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, Jared, it was great talking to you. Oh, I was going to say next week, we should talk about the myths of offers and compromise, because that is the one area I get the most questions in, and that people seem to have the most misunderstanding of how they work.
I would agree with that.
All right. Well, on that note, that's what we'll be talking about next week.
Sounds good.
Well, hey, have a great day, Jared, and a happy 4th of July.
You too, Jim. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. I know that I did. And if you have any questions or concerns, you can certainly reach out to me at 207-502-7181 or contact me at jwade@jdwadelaw.com. All this information will be in the show notes in case you don't want to write it down. I hope you all had a wonderful 4th of July, and I hope you'll join us on the next episode. Have a great day.